How often do you suppose it was that the man who was waiting by the side of the pool, how long did he wait for someone to take him in, to take him to that place? This pool that is at the sheep's gate, is the idea was that when the water would ripple, that was a sign that there was an angel of the Lord stirring the waters. And so what you would do then if you had any kind of illness is you would run, hurry, and if you were the very first one to get into the water, you would be healed. If you were second, too bad, so sad. You had to be the first one. And our lessons for today are very different. The story of Lydia and the story of this unnamed man. But I think in both of them, we can learn some things about how you do ministry. And we all do ministry in one way or the other as faithful people. But there's some advice here that's good to pay attention to. So when Jesus asks this man if he wanted to be made well, it would have seemed reasonable to expect that he would have said, yes, oh yes, please, I would like to be healed. But instead, what we find is the man complains. He is probably the most ungrateful, the most ungracious, the most disinterested person that Jesus ever healed. He says, buddy, I've got nobody to put me in the pool. So if and when the water starts to move, I am never the first one to get there. I've tried again and again, but someone always gets there before me. He's not happy. And for me, this sounds like a very real conversation with Jesus. This guy wants to be healed, but he doesn't know who Jesus is or what Jesus might be capable of. And so he speaks to Jesus, not from a position of worship or faith or admiration. He just tells Jesus his story. And in his words, you can hear years, 38 years of unmet hopes. Day after frustrating day, waiting for a chance to be healed, but never having anyone there to help him get the chance. Our other story comes from the 16th chapter of Acts. And what you might recall is when the chapter begins, Paul has asked Timothy, who is a young man, but an adult, he's asked Timothy to come with him, to come and be a part of their group. And so they go with Silas and they travel around Asia Minor. But before they say goodbye to Timothy's mother and his grandmother, Paul makes sure that Timothy is circumcised. He's an adult man. But people knew that his dad was Greek, and so Paul didn't want people to be suspicious of Timothy's motives. He wanted them to understand that Timothy was fully committed to following Jesus, and so it was necessary for him to be circumcised. For me, those details tell us two important things about doing ministry. First, it is best done with a partner, or even better, as a part of a community. That's why Paul wanted Silas to come and Timothy and this unnamed speaker that goes along, whose name was probably Luke. He wanted them to be with him to do this work, not to travel on his own. The second thing this story tells us is that serving Jesus may mean sacrifices or pain on our part. It isn't always easy to be a follower of Jesus. Just ask Timothy. Before going to Macedonia, Paul's group goes northwest from Jerusalem to Lystra and Derbe, and then they go to Phrygia and Galatia. But they go to these places, and the Holy Spirit says, you can't preach here. There's no work for you here. Somehow God turns them away. And so they change their direction and they go further north and then they go to the east to Bithynia. But the Spirit of Jesus stops them and prevents them from preaching there as well. So they have to backtrack to the west and they end up in Troas, which is it's north of where Jerusalem, it's kind of almost as far north as Rome would be, but it's in Asia Minor. It's a coastal city. And Paul's plan had been to go back to the cities where he had preached in the past on his first trip. He wanted to see how things were going, but with the Holy Spirit being very determined to direct where he should go, Paul's plans didn't work out the way he had intended, because God had other plans in mind. Now, I've never quite felt like the Spirit of Jesus was keeping me from going to one place or another, but I have no trouble imagining what Paul must have been feeling. You want so badly for a plan to succeed, and you believe that you're doing the right thing at the right time, in the right place. You've thought about it, you've prayed about it, you've tried to get it right. but it just doesn't work out the way that you had hoped. Ministry comes with both failures and triumphs. Everyone who has ever gotten into a relationship with God can tell you that they have experienced both joys and disappointments. Serving God can be exhausting, both physically and emotionally. As they were making their way from town to town, Paul has this dream of a man in Macedonia. And, you know, I don't think there's a sign saying this guy is in Macedonia, but somehow from his clothing, or he just knew, but this guy is in Macedonia, and he begs Paul to come and to help them. And Paul was convinced that this wasn't just some crazy dream, but it was a message from God. And so they catch the first boat the next morning to sail from Troas to Macedonia, and then they walk up from the coast to the city of Philippi. We know from his letters that the Philippian church became one of Paul's absolute favorites. But this was the first time that he interacted with the faithful of that city. And although Paul's vision was of a man calling him to Macedonia, the first people that he meets, the first people that he interacts with, are women. Lydia, a woman who owns her own business, has her own money and her own household, is described as being a worshiper of God. And the Lord makes her willing to listen to what Paul has to say. Her heart is warmed, and she asks to be baptized. When they threw out their nets that morning, Lydia wasn't the fish that they thought that they would catch. But after they caught her, they also baptized her entire household, her children, her servants. Whoever was there was a part of her family, whether they were related or they just worked in her house. All of them were baptized. And she offered Paul a place to stay. Her open heart resulted in having open doors, and Paul is challenged to believe that this Gentile woman, who has a business that is meant to serve the Roman population, he is challenged to believe that she is serious about God, that she is serious about Jesus, and that it's a good thing for him to stay in her home. She extends hospitality to Paul and his companions, and they accept. There is a lot that is left to our imaginations in the story of Lydia and Paul. What do they talk about? Who are these other women that are there, and what happens to them? What we do know is that Lydia's openness and faithfulness leads her to extend hospitality to Paul and his friends. Her enthusiasm and her income as a business owner put her in a position to support Paul in this new congregation that will grow in Philippi. And what you can also learn by reading Paul's letters is the people in Philippi who started that church didn't have a lot of anything. And so Lydia's presence there was important. Her willing to open this her house up to other people as a place to worship, a place they could gather in safety, that was a significant gift. She became a part of Paul's ministry team by extending hospitality and by being generous. And it's good to remember that her actions were quite unexpected. Support for the work that you do, for the ministry that you do, can be found in unexpected places, coming from those who we do not anticipate will extend it back. We think sometimes, well, I'm not, that person's a lost cause. They are not the one who's going to want to hear what I have to say, who's going to want to take my invitation. But you can be surprised. Paul set sail looking for a man to share the good news in Macedonia, but instead he meets Lydia, and she becomes for him a person who is there, a solid person backing us up. Preacher Elizabeth Johnson makes the point that ministry is often equated with those individuals and things that are visible. That when we talk about ministry and we talk about ministers, we must be talking about the pastor, maybe the church staff, and that the things that make for ministry are the choir, and it's important to have a nice organ and a lovely building, and that that's what makes ministry happen. But Lydia's story is a reminder that ministry is made possible by those who often are not seen and at times are not named. Our gifts that we give are so important to keeping this place going. But you don't know what people give. You don't know where they're at. And there are people who silently make the work of this congregation happen. They may not wear a robe on Sunday morning, but they are just as important to the life of this congregation. This story is a reminder that the church is strengthened then and now by people who demonstrate their faithfulness, both in their words and their deeds, but also in the ways that they are generous, the ways that they are welcoming, the ways that they financially support ministry to happen. The proclamation of the word has opened their hearts. It has opened them up with the result of having opened doors. Lydia's story is one that is upbeat and encouraging, and it makes me want to go out and do something because she's so cool. She's just willing to turn her life around for Jesus. But then there's that guy that's back at the fountain where we left him. His story, I think, is a reminder that people who are in need of care may not ask for our help. Why is it that he sat there for 38 years and nobody helped him get into the pool? There must have been at least 38 chances. Did he not know who to ask? Was he too shy? Did he not want to ask someone? Sometimes people who need help don't want to ask for it. They may think that their request is unimportant and not worthy of our attention. So as followers of Jesus, we need to be observant. We need to pay attention to what's going on around us, to think logically of what's happening for that person that we know or someone we're acquainted with. And then have the nerve to ask if you can give help. Not let's get together and have lunch someday kind of help, but real help with a plan date, with a plan of action. And you may get turned down. Is there anything I could do? Can I come and bring you dinner on Tuesday? Well, the answer may be no. Or the answer may be, oh my gosh, that would be fabulous. Thank you for wanting to do that. The things that we do may be unsolicited, but we need to have the courage to ask. And we need to remember that the people we approach aren't always happy to see us. They are not always going to be joyful in their interactions. This man at the pool, he was not thinking Jesus was coming along and going to do a miracle for him. And his response is kind of edgy and not really, oh, this is terrific. He's kind of lippy with Jesus. People that we approach and ask if we can help may be tired or frustrated or skeptical about our invitation, and that may be for a very good reason, but we still can share the story of Jesus. We still can make those offers of gracious care. I truly hope that you will invite someone to come with you to church on Sunday. And if not next Sunday, maybe the Sunday after that or the Sunday after that. We were trying to think of a way to have a celebratory kind of event where we could invite people that we hadn't seen for a while or people that have never been here. So what is the event that always brings people in? If you can't, you know, establish Christmas sometime in June, what could we do? And the answer was very clear to anyone you asked. Well, we need to invite the Brenners to come and play. This place is packed when they come to visit us. And so we're inviting them in the hopes that you will invite someone else to come and to be a part of that joyful worship. But remember, when you make that invitation, it may not turn out the way that you'd hoped, but we need to try. Someone helped you find your way here, and you can help someone else. Even if you were born into this congregation, you've been here forever. Susan Lear is a great example. Here is a person who knows, I swear she knows everyone's family tree. I rarely can tell her any information that she hasn't already heard. She is plugged into this place. But she doesn't have to be here. She could be someplace else. But this is her congregation, and this is the place that has called her to serve. We all make a choice. Doesn't matter how long you've been here. You choose to be here on Sunday mornings. You choose to get involved with the ministry of this congregation. Someone invited you in, and you came and you stayed. Who might need your invitation this week? Sharing the good news of Jesus often goes in a direction that is completely unplanned. We may think we know what God wants, and when the Spirit actually wants us to do something entirely different. So we need to be flexible. We need to go with the flow. We need to follow the Spirit's lead and not worry when it doesn't work out the way we thought it should. Every year at this time, seminary students, Lutheran seminary students, are waiting anxiously to find out where will their first call be? Where is the church going to be that they are going to be able to serve as a pastor? Where will God send them? And will the people in that place want them to be their next pastor? And in 1988, I was one of those students, and I had said on my paperwork, I was willing to go anywhere. There wasn't a town in the United States that I was going to turn down. There wasn't a state that didn't sound interesting. I had lived in too many places to start getting picky at that point. Based on my life experience, though, I figured I would end up as an associate pastor with responsibility for Christian education and youth, and it would be somewhere in the suburbs, probably somewhere in the middle of the country. To me, that's what my paperwork said. This woman belongs in a suburb outside of Kansas City doing youth ministry. That's where she's going to end up. I was wrong. That is not where I went. Instead, God called me to serve a very small congregation in a very small town. Ava, Missouri is bigger than Bedminster, but it is a lot smaller than Perkasie. And the biggest city was 60 miles away. It was definitely not the suburbs. There wasn't a suburb within 3 or 4 hour drive of where I was sent. And I was the only pastor. And I was the first pastor they had who was under 60. And I was the first pastor who wasn't coming out of retirement. I was the first pastor who was female. There were a lot of first things about me. Nobody quite expected it would happen, but it did. And I am so glad that God sent me to that place. I was able to do some things there, to be a part of that community and to be a pastor and preach the word and share the sacraments and to teach confirmation to 2 kids, just 2, those were all we had. And I learned so much. I learned from those people. I received so much grace and care, and they taught me how to be a better pastor. God does not always work the way that we expect, and people don't always respond to the good news of Jesus in ways that make sense to us. But we are called to keep at it and to remember it's never about us. What we're doing is not about me and my church. What we're doing is about God and God's community. I hope that you will be strengthened this summer as we gather together and hear in the lessons about what the disciples did and how they were trained and held up for ministry. And I also hope that there's a friend that you want to bring with you next week. We're going to have a lovely time. We are going to celebrate the fact that God welcomes us here each and every Sunday. He welcomes us home. He has a place prepared for us. Blessings on your work this week.